Welcome to Casterbus. This is the Doctor Who podcast, and my name is Christian Corley. His name, he's James McLean. How are you doing, James?
I'm all right. I mean, you said before this, am I ready? And I said, yeah. And then I thought, well, ready for me is like, I don't know the topic. I don't know how long we'll be here. I guess I'm ready, but I don't actually do anything, do I?
Well, actually, what happened before is I asked James, are you all right, James? And then he started monologuing in this great long speech, which is, that's what actually we're here to talk about, isn't it, really?
Oh, yes, yes. I did actually throw an idea earlier, isn't it?
Yeah, so that is what we're doing, which is the reason we're doing this is because James happened upon a video and he thought it was going to give him, it was about Doctor Who speeches, he thought it was going to give him something interesting and different, and it turned out to be the same one that everyone suggests. And
in fairness, I mean, it was done very well.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't knock the actual delivery and the dissection of the scene, but I was kind of expecting something, I don't know, because everyone has done that scene. I kind of thought it would be something a little more left field and like, I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good scene.
Well, yeah, these opinions are plentiful and yes. So we're recording this on the 19th of October, and in a few days' time, The Power of the Doctor will be on, and that will be the end of the Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall era. However, there isn't really much we can say about it until we've seen it. So we're just going to you know, record this as normal. So it's kind of a nice kind of evergreen podcast that you can dip in and out of at any point. But of course, there will probably be some sort of speech or a monologue by the Doctor at some point before she regenerates. And you may wonder when you come across this in 18 months' time why we didn't include it. Well, that's why, because it hasn't happened yet. So backtrack slightly, the monologue speech that you were referring to was the Capaldi 12th Doctor one in the Zygon two-parter, wasn't it?
Yes, the Silurian inversion. I get them mixed up. And then I was thinking, like, I have a right to get them mixed up because they're monsters, which are all pretty much the same. They're very rubbery. They talk with both a kind of like a with the slur when it comes to a name. There's always that bit of a slur, and they've got problems with their muscle movements. They're all the same.
Okay.
Zygon, Silurian.
Fine. I'm not going to argue with you about that. You have a point.
I don't have a point. I just put
neither of us could
there.
Remember the name of the Zygons when we were having the conversation. I was in the middle of I was arms deep in a cable drawer looking for a HDMI cable for a Raspberry Pi Zero. It's very, very geeky and silly. So anyway, look, the great thing about speeches and monologues in Doctor Who is it not only does it give the actors something to work with, and to, you know, they spot it and they think, well, I can do something good with this. But it's also the writers as well. Stephen Moffat's written some fantastic speeches in his Doctor Who years. He's not the only one, of course. So let's start with that Capaldi one, though, because the thing is, I've remained completely unmoved by it.
Yeah, and I think when back in the day when it aired, we talked about this, and I don't think any of us who were involved in that conversation were particularly blown away by it.
No, enamoured. None of us were enamoured. It has a reputation, but it doesn't seem to. I mean, it's almost as if. I mean, it's not. It can't be. But it's almost as if that's the first time anyone saw, or people of a particular age saw, the Doctor doing a speech.
I'm wondering if it's more cynical than that. I wonder, I mean, I know people like to lament on Jodie Whittaker's era, but they seem to forget through that Capaldi era, through the middle, there was kind of a sort of a mixture of feelings about whether he was doing well or not, coming from all flanks. There's a lot of, you know, old people who weren't very happy with the story. Younger people were quite, I think, like the Tom Baker days, very keen on the previous Doctor, and the new Doctor they weren't really clicking with as easily. And the stories were a bit all there and everywhere, some very good, some questionable, or were disputed, perhaps is a better term. And yeah, I think that was possibly one of the first times there was kind of like a big speech which seemed to get people on board, maybe. And yet I didn't really feel it worked. And I, to be honest, I can't even really remember why it just didn't really hit home for me.
Well, looking back at the show, it was myself, you and Brian Townover. And we talked about this live on Google Hangout. And I seem to recall that there was a lot of silliness with, I mean, there's the whole unit aspect to this, and there's the Osgood character, which I don't particularly care for. And I don't think that helps either. Then you've got this sort of retread of revisiting the Black Archive from the Day of the Doctor and that. And I don't know, it just feels as if maybe was this speech sort of wedged in there for pacing because they decided they're doing a two-part story and really the maybe felt there wasn't enough story there for two episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't disagree with anything you really said there. It just felt, to me, it felt a bit long. I mean, it was very well elocuted. Yeah, I mean, he's a very competent actor. He's a brilliant actor.
He is.
You've got, got a good script there as well. So there's nothing actually wrong with the script. There's nothing wrong. I think for me, some of it was, as we said at the time, I don't think they ever really understood, or they were never quite sure how to pitch the Capaldi Doctor in terms of tone. And it felt in a season where that was very uncertain after the first season, which he'd been very, you know, a far more Malcolm Tucker light Doctor. This season, he wasn't that, but he wasn't quite as mellowed as he is in his final season. And it felt to me very much like a jigsaw puzzle, as if this was something the Doctor would do and they gave it to him. But it didn't feel very authentic because the Doctor at that time, for me, didn't feel very authentic. I wasn't really sure where they were going with him. And I think, it was a speech, of one of his speeches, which didn't really work. And strangely enough, I felt that I never really enjoy, oh God, I've got to be careful here, because I do like his acting. I did like his work. But I found him a better Doctor when he wasn't making the long speeches almost. I didn't somehow feel the Doctor that we met initially was one that would be that prone to very long speeches. It felt like a handover from the sort of thing that Smith would do. Smith was a big long speecher. That was his sort of personality. Capaldi's never felt that like that to me. So when he did his very long out speech in his last episode, you know, it was very beautifully written. It didn't feel to me that that Doctor that I had first met, and even the Doctor in that season, would perhaps been so indulgent with that. I think that's probably why the speech didn't work for me particularly, because it just didn't really fit, or I didn't really understand that Doctor to really make that. It just felt almost like constructs, as you say, almost like an artificial thing that they plopped in there.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Interesting.
Yeah. It's the thing is, as well, when you're, it's not even that, actually. I was going to say, when you're familiar with older Doctor Who episodes, and there's a lot of very good speeches across that. But then again, there are plenty of other good speeches that have happened in the modern era of Doctor Who. There is, for instance, the one about the Doctor, not by the Doctor, but about the Doctor, from The Family of Blood, Lloyd's monologue at the end of the two-parter, when the Doctor, is it a revenge thing that he does to the Family of Blood? I suppose it's for their own benefit as well. Maybe teach them
again,
a lesson.
Again, a reminder why I don't consider him, I think he's a brilliant but not a definitive Doctor, because very anti-doctorist things going on there, which were great, but against the mold, which was what made them interesting.
But then again,
I was thinking that as well. You know, the first thing you sort of do when you think great speech in Doctor, you think of the Doctor, and you think, well, is that always the case? Is there other people who do good speeches? Is it
from time to time?
Is that just an assumption? Yeah,
from time to time there is. But then again, there is the Doctor himself. I can feel it, the turn of the earth, the ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, and all of that from Rose, which, I mean, that was literally padding, wasn't it? Rusty Davies said so himself. He added that same thing because the episode was underrunning considerably. It was the first bit of Doctor Who that anyone had made in 10 years nearly. And yet, it is such a key moment, not just for the episode, but for the era as well.
I mean, that also things, when we talk about speeches, we obviously, and again, it could be like, how, what do we define as a speech?
Oh,
I mean, I would consider that a speech line. I mean, certainly the one that we talk about, the Capaldi, is kind of a speech. It's kind of, there is rhetoric there, isn't it? It's not a conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, I like sometimes the shorter ones I find particularly powerful, which are less, you know, maybe they wouldn't be considered a speech because they're not long enough. But moments of speech, if I call it that way, that always hit me, that really hit me, we'll go back to Tennant again, is that end of time, that last bit with Wilf, where he, you know, where he's, you know, you're not remotely important. That whole section there, I think, is a really powerful bit of rhetoric, which again is also, again, is a speech. Are we always talking about it being about the singular person? Because in that case, if we consider that a speech, which some might not, you know, again, part of that is the reaction of Wilf in that interplay, even though Wilf doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
It's that's what makes it powerful. So what does make the speech powerful? And maybe going back to the Capaldi Zygon one of the things that to me didn't make it particularly powerful is that everyone is kind of dumb in it. And I mean that as in mute. They don't really say much. There's a few sort of knockbacks against the speech, but it is just really a space for Capaldi to perform. It's almost theatrical. And again, that's probably why I didn't feel that was a great speech.
I would put it on a par with Tennant's speech in the alternative universe Cyberman two-parter, Age of Steel and Rise of the Cybermen. I don't think that's a very good one when he's up there on the Cyberman headquarters in, is it Battersea Power Station? Is that where they are at that stage? The accidental lever pushing and all that stuff. I don't think that's a good one either.
Well, I've never really liked those bits, and you can go back, especially down to Tom Baker with this, where you have the speech as a moment where he takes control and he's doing something, or it's used as a way to escape. And I think there's always that feeling of a breakdown of reality when speeches are used to, as if everyone is held in place while he does some great bit of rhetoric, and don't at that moment think, actually, this would be a moment where I just shoot the guy. That sort of speech I always find kind of frustrating in Doctor Who, where it sort of breaks that sort of suspension of disbelief that this is just a funny comic moment where we have an outlandish speech and then a runaway moment. I kind of like the ones which kind of sit within the show and have impact or have a measure of relevance, even if they are kind of theatrical. I mean, I'm thinking of two McCoy ones, which are, to be honest, they're not mind-blowingly original. They're fairly famous in terms of thinking of McCoy. I mean, we've obviously got the one in the tea shop in the cafe,
in Remembrance of the Daleks
with the sugar. I think that's quite a nice one. I think it's one of the first times the show kind of gives the Doctor a break to actually reflect on what the hell he does. I can't really think of many times before that where that actually happens. And it was kind of unusual at the time, at this moment, yeah, where he sits and he reflects on his decisions. I can't initially think of many times where that has actually happened, where, you know, it's like, you know, what the hell am I doing? So that to me was quite a powerful moment and quite an understated moment as well. It's not one that people tend to think of in terms of speeches, but I think it's a good little monologue there.
Yeah, it is.
I think the other counter monologue for him, which goes against, I suppose, a bit what I just ranted about earlier, about 10 minutes earlier, 5 minutes earlier, 3 minutes earlier, I don't care, was the one in Happiness Patrol with the two guards, which he disarms in the up on the gantry. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, yes.
The two snipers, and he comes up behind them and he sort of talks them into sort of trying to shoot them, and they can't and they won't. I think that's, again, think of McCoy era. I like the, I didn't at the time, but I kind of like it now as I've got older, was Ace's flirtation in Curse of Fenric, where she has that really weird, odd monologue where she distracts a soldier. And at the time, it just doesn't quite work. It's a little of a, and again, I'm not sure a soldier would be so easily distracted, I kind of like it for its odd abstractness. It's quite an arty moment, which Ace doesn't tend to get. But is it a great speech? Probably not. But yeah, it's kind of just fun just to sort of delve into your memory of the show and just kind of find these moments where there is a little bit of rhetoric which sticks with you for whatever reason.
There are many, many speeches in Doctor Who, and I suppose they affect different people in different ways. We could go back all the way to the Dalek invasion of Earth when the Doctor leaves Susan behind. We could do the old Ark in Space.
That's a brilliant one.
It is a good one. I mean, a lot of the classic ones are, but maybe we've had longer time to appreciate them and filter out the good ones from the bad ones with the classic series, perhaps. You've got the Ark in Space Indomitable. You've got Every Great Decision Creates Ripples, as you were saying there. I don't know. I always enjoy the Colin Baker one. There's not much Colin Baker that I do enjoy, but I do have always enjoyed his rant against the court in Trial of the Time Lord.
Yes, absolutely. That is a nice, good bit of, a good moment for him, which is a shame because he's a doctor which has the opportunity to do some quite aggressive speeches, and they never really found how to work him. He never got the opportunity, I think, to really do some of those until he gets to the big finish, where he can do is do some more sort of monologuing. I mean, I like, you know, you bringing up the Dalek invasion, which I know is one that everyone talks about, which is made more famous by its use to tease into Five Doctors. But I mean, there's something really beautiful in that actual bit of writing there. That's I'm not amazingly keen on the Ark in Space one. I mean, it's fine. And it's interesting to see him acknowledge why he spends so much time with humans, which you don't really get before then. It's one of the first times I can think of where the show kind of sort of justifies his interest in the human race. But I mean, I tend to find that humans are awful beings, really. And I kind of find in his adventures, that would be my opinion after hundreds of years of traveling through them and the same sort of terrible circumstances having to be unraveled by you because the humans just can't do it themselves. But I like that first one of Hartnell's. You know, there's something really quite beautiful in it as well. This idea, that you're parting, but you're kind of, that's not a bad thing. And I like that, you know, go forward with all your beliefs, and I think there's just been really quite eloquent in that speech. Probably a little too eloquent for that doctor, maybe. But yeah, I really like that one.
Well, he gets through it all right.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I wonder whether that was a rare instance where they had to do a few takes, because I can't imagine getting it right first time at that stage. Well, I don't know. He wasn't too bad in 64, was he?
And there's a fifth doctor as well. We've kind of overlooked the fifth doctor slightly there, haven't we, as well? Because he wasn't free from having his own nice little quotes. There's the, for instance, for some people, small, beautiful events are what life is all about, which I was watching just a couple of days ago from Earthshock on YouTube. Not the full episode, I'm afraid. He has his own good examples. Some of them are largely quippy, though, in the Sayward era. They're very short, amusing quips rather than longer speeches. But from time to time, well, there are a few.
I mean, he is the breathless doctor, isn't he, really? That's how I describe him. He's always running around. He's always sort of, the way Davison delivers his lines, always like he's short of breath.
Yes.
Because everything's just too busy. So it kind of makes sense that you don't get those big speeches with him, I guess.
When you said breathless, I was thinking of Madonna for some reason. Blast from the past.
Well, for obvious reasons, the album being titled such.
Yes.
I mean, I was thinking back, the other speech I didn't like at the time, and I think it's on record in one of the podcasts, I didn't like it, but I grew to really like later, is Matt Smith's outro speech. I found it a little too smug and overly written, which I would, at the time, I think I'd have said that was one of Moffat's faults, that he doesn't let actors just breathe. If you think of Tennant's End, where there's very few words and it carries on performance, and then that last line, that sting before the regeneration, I was kind of annoyed that Smith kind of felt like he couldn't just act it. He had to sort of be a conduit for all this dialogue. But having rewatched it, I actually really like some of that. And again, a lot of it comes down to how Smith actually plays with it and gives it rhythm, which makes it really quite powerful. That lovely line, you know, that, you know, we all change, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, because who we were, as long as we don't forget who we were. He plays it to a really nice rhythm, and it's a really powerful moment. I think that's one that I do like. And yet I didn't really like Capaldi's Out. I kind of felt that was the same sort of thing again, but to me it was just too overwritten. And I hope, as you said, going to Jodie, I hope they don't overwrite her on this. I don't think you need to sometimes. I think sometimes you can let it go. I mean, think of Tom Baker, one of the most, you know, known for the rhetoric and the quotes. You know, he is the one that people go for the quirky quotes. You know, Tennant was built around that sort of character. And yet he's out in Legopolis. He has, okay, to be fair, they weren't on best of terms when it comes to writing, production, and Tom Baker. But he just has a couple of lines and they work. And then that awkward overdub of Nyssa, going, oh, he was the Watcher, he was the Doctor all along. But yeah, I think it's interesting, like, where is the good times where you have the rhetoric and where do you pull it back and just let the character do the job?
There's something I've noticed, yeah, is the Third Doctor doesn't have an awful lot of great speeches or to you know, highlight or dwell upon, really. The only one I can think of that's really has any particular lasting value is, when I meet a regime that needs to import savage alien life forms as security guards, I begin to wonder who the real criminals are, from Day of the Daleks.
That is a good one. I'm kind of hard pushed to think of, I mean, he was very much an action doctor, but I can't think of many quotes. It'd be interesting to see if the listener has any particular thoughts on Pertwee, on ones that have not sprung to mind, which were particularly good. I mean, I like some of his delivery. There's some lovely bits of delivery at the end of Day of the Daleks, you know, with the accusation, you know, of them creating the paradox, which is not a powerful speech, but it's just the way that he plays his doctor, you know, is has a kind of, in, you know, the way that he speaks is kind of cool. But then again, Patrick Troughton doesn't really get that many speeches either.
Well, he has some good ones. There's the Cybermen in the moon base. There's some Corners of the Universe, which have bred the most terrible things. There's Tomb of the Cybermen, where he's recalling his family.
Yeah, that's true. That's quite an early interesting one.
Yeah. So I think there's a few. I suppose probably the thing with Patrick Troughton is that with most of his episodes missing, we have the audio to focus on, and maybe our minds overcompensate with picturing things, and maybe some of those some things don't hit home the way they should.
I mean, I suppose again it comes down to the character, and there could be an argument made that prior to Baker, the characters were more created independently, rather than to a template, or based a little bit around a template or to subvert a template, which was kind of what Tom Baker creates. So those early ones, you know, Troughton's character wasn't really about speeches. He was very reactionary, a bit like Davison would end up playing, and maybe Jodie to a degree. You know, the out of control, not always, you know, the moments where they're in control are fairly rare. And so you don't get those moments in those circumstances to be speeching. So his pockets of speeches are kind of perhaps a little less obvious because of that.
We're calling it speeching now, are we?
Yeah, we are.
Oh.
Speeching. So is anyone that we haven't thought of the speeching about?
Paul McGann.
We haven't mentioned.
Yeah. which is obviously tricky because there's only two television appearances. There's a lot of audio appearances, though, and I mean, Paul McGann generally kicks it out of the park on the radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's very difficult to actually focus on one. I mean, he's done dozens, if not hundreds, of .2 audio. So finding one in particular is a little bit tricky, I think. But, you know, I was enjoying him getting excited over his shoes. Well, that's not really the same thing, is it?
No, yeah. There is a struggle in the TV movie, I think, to find a particularly good speech. But yeah, as you say, I mean, I've been listening to some of the Time War stuff, the Susan Foreman box set for the Time War, which he features in the final story. And again, he does. I can't think of any particular speech, but he's just. It's kind of. It's sad that he doesn't get TV appearances. But as you say, he has the perfect voice for audio. I mean, one of the strengths of McGann is his voice.
Yeah.
He's got a sort of got a cadence and a tone.
As many advertising agencies across Great Britain know.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're going to have a doctor for audio, it's going to be him. He fits it well. And his voice is timeless. While, you know, other actors have the voice, you can feel age. You don't really feel it with McGann even now. So...
Perhaps.
Yeah, he's...
There's one in Storm Warning, which is perhaps... I'm sticking my neck out here, but I'm thinking... Based on the fact it was given away on .2 Magazine, and it's the first one, there's a very good chance that that's the one that most people have heard. You feel that pounding in your heart, that tightness in the pit of your stomach, the blood rushing to your head. Do you know what that is? That's adventure. The thrill and the fear and the joy of stepping into the unknown. That's why we're all here, and that's why we're alive. That's a good one. But obviously, you know... he has many, many others. I mean, I'm pretty sure there must be one in every episode, in every audio, because I can think many, many Paul McGann speech monologues from the Big Finish pantheon.
So, what about people other than the Doctor?
Valiard, does he count as not the Doctor? Because he has a few.
Yeah, I think he can.
I've been thinking a lot about Trial of the Time Lord lately and how it starts off in this kind of bafflement and confusion, and then throughout it's punctuated with bafflement and confusion. Then you get to the end and things suddenly just take that extra ramping up, as silly as it might be in many ways. And then it suddenly becomes really, really good. And then the last sort of 10 minutes... aren't really, really good, and it goes back into bafflement and confusion again.
It's one of those things where it almost feels like if you'd taken that series, and I know this would have seemed like a very pedestrian way, and just had three stories, which then the events of those stories led to a final story, which was set on the Time Lord trial ship, and it would have actually probably worked better because the stories are actually kind of ruined by the insertions of the trial, which don't really feel like they ever go anywhere, because there's nowhere for them to go until pretty much the end of Terror of the Vervoids. So it feels like I'd have rather had Mysterious Planet, Mind Warp. Obviously, there need to be some sort of intro, or not. You could have just kind of had them start with, you know, Terror of the Vervoids, where time's moved on. You know, he's lost Perry, and we're kind of wondering what's happened in between. That could have been kind of dovetailed in, you know, why has he forgotten Perry? And then Trial of the Time Lord explains all that as a final story. And that could have, I think that'd have been more satisfying to watch. And as you say, you'd have got less of that confusion, and Trial of the Time Lord with the Valiard would have hit better, I think, in that sort of sense. Maybe it's two episodes. Well, it could have been two, three episodes. I mean, it's kind of, I think would have worked better for that season. I remember watching it the first time and just getting really annoyed at going back to the court. It's like, I don't want to keep going back to the court. It's annoying. The Valiard is annoying. You know, it's an unreasonable situation and we're not really in on the act. Stop it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I suppose, I mean, the Master gets his go in that story, doesn't he? Appearing on the vid screen and telling everyone what's really going on. That's a bit of a monologue, and it's a bit of a speech, and it's quite a good one, really, especially when he makes his little revelation. And and of course, you've got Peoples of the Universe, Please Attend Carefully. Which
I was just, that probably, was going through my head. Yeah. I just love that bit.
Yes. And so,
it's such a funny episode, because it's so, like all those episodes, largely because of budget and time, it's very tight and insular. It's just, you know, a few characters running around the place most of the time. And yet, as Doctor Who goes, it's the most epic story they've ever done. You know, not just the wiping out of planets, but in things like the Master speaking to everyone in the entire universe at the same time. What that means and how that works, no one knows. But it's real massive grand ideas. But most of it is sort of jumping around in a field for that part of the story and up a tower and then go to Weirdo Legopolis. And it's a really odd tale. And I love it for it. I just love that sort of weird mix of small and beyond big ideas.
I suppose Davros has his couple of ones absolutely. As well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've forgotten again. People tend to gravitate with McCoy and his run against Davros with his rice pudding, et cetera, as being a particularly good moment. And I think it was good at the time. I mean, probably people read it, watch it now and think, well, you know, it's not that funny. It's not that clever. But to me, it was after a very uncertain two series of three series with the Colin Baker era, and then the first year of Sylvester, which as a young boy didn't feel quite as if it knew what it was doing, even as a young boy. You get to that moment in Remembrance, the first episode of that season, and you suddenly start feeling like that moment is one where McCoy really takes control of the character, and it sort of culminates in that whole feeling of going in a different direction. And I think that's probably why that speech had more impact at the time. You know, it's a character who's just been bumbling around in his first year. And this year he takes on Davros and the Daleks, and he don't care. You know, he's in control, mate. And that is a really good moment, I think, for him.
Yeah. Are there any others, though? Cybermen don't really tend to talk an awful lot, so apart from the Cyber Leader.
I think there's again a moment in Curse of Fenric. I think it's a nice, it's rather less a speech, but rather an interplay which focuses on Ace, with Ace and the Doctor, where she actually calls him out for control. And the same in Ghostlight. I think there's some moments for that character, whereas again, they're not speeches in that Doctor way, but they are sort of very vocal moments, powerful moments delivered by the second, in your principal cast. I think that was very powerful. I'm sure we're probably missing a load new series, with the companions especially, where they do have moments where they've have to reconcile stuff. I mean, I'm sure the stuff with Donna that we're missing.
Yeah.
And fires of Pompeii, you know, owl.
And Bill as well. I think
pleading
Bill,
with the Doctor.
Bill was probably Moffat's best companion in terms of writing. So...
I mean, there were elements, I think, of the representation which were not quite right, but by and large, I think Bill was a good character, and I think he did that well.
it's very tricky to sort of navigate this away from the obvious, isn't it? Because they're very big, and I guess they're obvious for a reason. Because we've all seen them and we all remember them because they were very memorable. But like you say, there's definitely people like Donna and I think Bill and Rose Tyler must have had one or two.
I mean, there's, again, it's not a speech. It's not speeching, but there is that lovely, I just think it's worth saying just for people watching, listening to this and going down memory lane, that lovely interplay between Jack and the Doctor in Utopia, you know, where Jack's in the sealed room and they're sort of, there is almost like a sexual tension there, is with the Doctor behind the glass talking to Jack about what he is. It's not a speech, but
no.
I kind of like it and like to call it out as I mean, I know we've not really mentioned it, but obviously, again, it's a bit of a dialogue, but the speechy elements to it is Wilf from the Doctor in End of Time in the ship, where Wilf sort of refers back to his experiences in life. But it's yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think outside the box here. Now I'm trying to think of specific characters doing specific things, and I mean, particularly companions. I'm trying to think of a companion who, I suppose, there's two things that I would remember Bonnie Langford's Mel for, and that's one is witching on about megabyte modems. And the other one would be, come on. And the other one would be screaming, I guess.
The problem with companion speeches pre-new series is a lot of them were never really about the eloquence. They were normally speeches which were where they're pleading to a group of people to do something, whether for good or for bad. They're rallying speeches
Yes.
rather than actual speeches which
Jo's got
are
a lot of those, hasn't she?
absolutely. And I was thinking Sarah obviously has a lot of them
Yeah.
as well. And they kind of don't really hit home in anything memorable because they're expositional to some way. They're trying to drive the story. They're either giving information to characters. Well, they're not expositional, but they're trying to drive the story in a certain direction rather than actually grandstand a moment in that same sort of way. But the new series, you don't get that so much because you do get those sort of moments where there is agency within those characters, which is beyond sort of pushing the story in a direction. But they're always dwarfed, aren't they, by these big speeches. The Matt Smith speech in Rings of Akkatan, is always one that people talk about. These big, loud moments which sit in your memory and they kind of blot out what all the other characters are doing and saying. Which is a shame. I'm kind of hoping that maybe in this last one, maybe there'll be some speeches for Ace or Tegan, something that speaks to them because they are big guest characters for this story. Or, if Donna appears. There must be stuff for Donna in Turn Right, surely.
Turn left.
Turn left, turn right. Yeah, I'm in a different dimension where it was turn right, clearly.
Okay.
Turn left. There must be stuff in there.
Well, it's very much a Donna episode, isn't it? Or a Donna and Wilf episode.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, but they don't really spring to mind in the same way as other doctors do, unfortunately.
Well, there's Hole Punch having that, Staple of Mine, Toy Cactus, you can have that, Beatrice. Catch, Cliff, I'd leave you my mouse mat, but I'm worried you'd cut yourself. What a character.
Incredible writing. I hope we get some of that. Is Davis writing for the new series at all, or is he just producing?
I'm pretty sure he is. I've never
He
seen
must
anything
be.
saying he's not. I'm pretty sure I've seen things that saying he's writing things. So, there's a rumor that
Well,
Stephen Moffat's written something as well, even though he says he's
I
not.
mean, the format does sort of always scream that if you're going to be this sort of head honcho, you always end up being the head script writer. So, or if nothing else, editor. So I'd be surprised if his impact, he is an impact there. And I think it'd be interesting to see Moffat come back. It'd be interesting because Moffat's done a lot of stuff in the last few years. It'd be interesting to see how he would come back to the show and what he would do there. It was interesting, obviously, when we had the pandemic and we had those little moments of material being dropped by different writers. Which was kind of interesting to see, different takes and how takes change over the years.
Maybe, I mean,
I
there
don't
is
know.
so much we can talk about with this, and we are in danger of running out of time, so perhaps we should finish with one. And I think I've possibly found certainly one of the more memorable in the past decade. This is from Thin Ice. Human progress isn't measured by industry, it's measured by the value you place on a life, an unimportant life, a life without privilege. The boy who died on the river, that boy's value is your value. That's what defines an age. That's what defines a species. Which is very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. And yet it's so easily forgotten, isn't it? That's, I think, kind of annoys me when you get those kind of ones like that and they get lost. And all we remember are the, do I have the right speeches, or is it
Maybe
safe?
this is something to do with the episodes in the eras as well. Then maybe this whole memorable speech, memorable episode, memorable speech, unmemorable episode. Everyone forgets it. Although Thin Ice isn't a bad episode,
No.
I think it's quite a good one. I think it's where it lands in Doctor Who and who the Doctor is and whether the show has the attention of the amassed public eyes, which I guess it didn't at that point.
Maybe. I mean, like I said, I mean, I've gone through a few of the McCoy ones at the time where, attention was limited, but again, maybe they stand out. I think the problem, again, this makes me sound like I'm an old grump, but the problem with the speeching that we have now is that it's so much in kind of almost like part of the format that you're expecting at some point the big speech,
Yeah.
almost like, you would in Community with Jeff Winger or with House in House MD. You're waiting for those moments where it spins, and so the point is, it doesn't become they become cluttered and almost forgotten as part of the formula. While, when you get these little moments in a show which the format didn't really lend to speeches, they become very memorable. So yeah, you do get the memory of McCoy or Baker, or even it's and Hartnell especially, because they just weren't there. I look forward to seeing what people actually write on this in comments, because as I say, I've drawn a lot of blanks where I feel I should be firing out some really good ones. And I think that's just because there's just so much history, it's easy to sort of lose
It is.
sight of where those speeches are. I'm sure, we've under a, whether, did was the stuff in Time of the Doctor we've missed? Probably not. Yeah. It's a weird one, but as I say, by that point, it's just part of the character.
Yeah, I suppose with that as well, it has to be there for every as that becomes more and more part of the character, it has to be more unique and sort of definitive and big and powerful. Otherwise, it kind of loses the impact, doesn't it? Or you just don't do them at all. You just leave it a season or two and then do one.
Well, that's probably the point. I mean, if we're going back to what we said at the beginning, how do you define a speech? And I think kind of, and we've not been doing that throughout this session, so don't think this is like a good summary of our arguments and points here. It's kind of the opposite. Surely the speech is something, as you say, which kind of stands out alone from your expectations of consuming that story, something which sort of almost breaks out of that reality and makes you think in a way that the story is trying to make you think rather than the reality is actually being. So when you get those sort of
Yeah,
moments,
and maybe that's why the inversion, Saigon inversion one doesn't work as well, because by that point the story is already set up to challenge your expectations of the story and the wider impact of the story and what it's saying about society. And you know that there's a speech coming, and when you know that there's a speech coming, you kind of
yeah.
want the speech to get on with it, don't you? As opposed to a speech
Yeah.
that comes out of nowhere, which can take its own path because you weren't expecting it.
Absolutely. And it becomes its own little moment of time, that feels eloquent, beautiful, and contributes. And maybe, yeah, when speeches don't contribute to the satisfaction of what, well, obviously it does for some. I mean, obviously it is interpretive, but I think that for me is why. Maybe, but then saying that again, I've not watched that since it came on. Maybe if I rewatched that episode, I would find I treat it differently now. It
Perhaps.
has happened. I mean, I've watched a lot of the Smith stuff and enjoyed them a lot more on the second run or third than I did when I first watched them. So maybe I would get more out of that speech, but on that first watch, it left me cold, despite the good performances. And I think that's just interesting. It's like, why was that?
Well,
Because I didn't want to dislike it.
we started watching the Pandorica Opens the other night. And
Okay.
I
Yeah.
wasn't anywhere near excited, as excited by it as I was the first time and other subsequent views as I was that night. It just seemed very slow, if anything. And just, you know, I'm going to preface that by saying we had just watched Vincent and the Doctor, which is by no means a pacey adventure thriller by any means. So, yeah, it's strange, isn't it, how you come into them and mood and expectation affects the episode. That's an entirely different podcast right there, though.
I mean, I never really clicked with the... I'm trying to remember what it was called. Is it Time of the Angels? The two-parter with... Yeah.
With River Song.
Matt Smith.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, obviously, as I've said before, the River Song stuff I found very difficult at the time, and I still do watching it. But, you know, there's some moments in that which at the time didn't really do much for me. Now when I watch it, I just really like, I kind of like, again, going back to speeches a bit, where he does that little speech at the end of part one, you know,
yep.
There's one thing you should never put in a trap.
Absolutely.
And even though at the time I was like, this is really obvious, I kind of know what he's going to say here because I'm used to this sort of thing with this sort of character now. But on a rewatch, it was like, actually, this really fits in this moment. We've watched a lot of people die needlessly in this story. There's a lot of, you know, and the angels are kind of not just predatory, but they kind of toy as well. And it's really quite satisfying in having him turn around and sort of make this point that he's just not having it anymore. You know, and you know, don't mess with him because he will screw you over when it suits him because he's that powerful. So yeah, it's the interpret. I mean, this is another podcast in itself. But how, you know, one interprets an adventure is then how you reinterpret it when you watch it again makes it very hard to sort of find value in your opinion. I don't like this episode, and then you know, 3 years later, I watch it. Oh, actually, I quite like this episode. Yeah. So which one of me is right? No reason to say just the latest version of me watching this episode is right.
It's tricky. It is tricky, and we should probably leave it there.
Go forward with all your beliefs and prove to me that I'm not mistaken in mine.
Oh, very apt.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, we want your thoughts on this. So let us know which Doctor Who speeches, keep it at speeches, not quips and quotes, because they're very easily favourited. Oh, God, yeah. And that could... turn into a very long, winding and slightly irrelevant sort of feedback. But yeah, big quotes. Time travel is like visiting Paris. You can't just read the guidebook. You've got to throw yourself in, eat the food, use the wrong verbs, get charged double and end up kissing complete strangers. Or is that just me? That, I would say, is a speech. It's not a quotey, quippy thing, as opposed to something like... A cosmos without the Doctor scarcely bears thinking about, which is definitely just a quote. So hopefully I've managed to demarcate that in a sufficient manner. If there's anything you want to add to that, please do so. Probably Facebook's the best place to do that, on our Casterbris Facebook page, the link to which you'll find in the show notes. We will be back again soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
It's good, isn't it?
Hmm?